So why don't you get, you know, already done 30 Zoom calls and I tasted 700 wines. So I have a pretty good idea about 2020. But I wanted to, get your ideas more about, let's say, Northern Medoc and also just for Lafite, what you're thinking about that. I'm pretty familiar with the weather patterns and the rain in the middle of August and the rain at the end of September. So and also how great the Merlot was and the Cabernet was small and there was some rain at the end of the harvest. So I'm just curious how that all affected Lafite and what your thoughts were about the wines in general. So maybe Saskia can go first.
Yeah, so as you said, you're aware of what the weather was, so we're not gonna get back to that. But I think what was our biggest surprise in Lafite when we arrived and started tasting the grapes in late August was how there was a big paradox between the analysis that seemed very tame. And what we were tasting in the rows of vines that was very, very expressive. So that was really what we found is that in the end, we're producing a Lafite that is very tame on the alcohol. It comes out at 12.8, and it's very, very, but
Whoa.
it's very dense. It's like this little monster in a ball, but that hasn't really exploded. So I think that's my main surprise, and I think Eric
Yeah.
will agree with you, is that we had this incredible density that came out while we were doing all the écoulage. And at the same time, when we were looking at the paper and the science, it seemed like there was a dichotomy. And I think that is because of the rains of August, that when they happened, we were really scared because, we were going through the process of working the vineyard towards organic farming. So there was a real stress, and we thought that's way too much water. We don't want that much water. But when we started tasting to harvest, we were actually really thankful for that rain. And I think today you really see the difference. And that is what brought us to the balance and the incredible balance we have in the glass.
Wow, that sounds exciting. How about
Yeah.
you, Eric? What do you think? That sounds pretty crazy wine.
What's Saskia saying? What Saskia say for Cognac is the result of a very, very perfect summer after the difficult. That's why we said it was millésime de vigneron, because the beginning was complex until the end of June. You know that. But after that, July, August, and September was just perfect for stress, veraison with the irrigation, and after perfect maturation until the end.
Okay. And Juliet, maybe you could comment in Pomerol about Les Bons Gilles.
I think in Pomerol, the key was to preserve the freshness. It was difficult for us to pick up on the right moment. It's worse, no? It's worse. And to preserve the tension and the freshness in the wine, we still have the density in of the on the clay part, from the plateau. But during the vein, we want to add some tension and acidity. And I think that's it was a challenge, to still have the density and but in the same times vivacity. It was like a very I think the base was to pick up just before we passed this wall of fruit too black fruit, too ripe. That's why we I think the 2020 vintage was perfect for us to have like elegant metal and keep it in mind this freshness in our wine. I don't know if you eat when you tested, but that was very difficulties for us, notably during the brewing after that, to keep this freshness and intention in our wine.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's interesting because a lot of people speak about how great their Merlot was in 2020, and it, I mean, overall you could say it's a Merlot year, at least what I've tasted, although the wines with Cabernet are very good as well, but Merlots are really exceptional. Saskia, what do you think about Merlot? Because I thought it was interesting that even producers in Pauillac were talking about their Merlot.
You know what? I think why people were talking about their Merlots this year is that I think they surprised by their elegance, which hadn't been the case in 2018 and 2019, where they were a bit more potent. And I think that in the case of L'Evangile, what Juliette was saying is that the key to having good Merlot is the freshness, and in our case even more because we have quite a young vineyard, so we really had to push ourselves to harvest a lot earlier and harvest on the 2nd of September in order to really get freshness. And when we taste the vats, when we were doing the écoulage, we quite soon had really wonderful surprises. But as you know, Merlot is a very fragile grape. And so it's how do you tame it for it not to go into ballistic degrees of alcohol and to be way alcoholic. And I think that our good surprise, and Juliette arrived on the 6th, and so it was on the 6th of September directly from China and was ready to taste and to be in the vineyard. And I think the good surprise and the real efforts that we made on the second part, once the heat had passed, was on the Cabernet Franc. And having that special vat that's called CF6 that we made, that is actually the best, individual vines that we found inside the plots, and we marked each one. And we harvested that separately. We did a special tri, and that in the end, Juliette, was one of your favorite Cabernet Francs.
Wow.
Yeah, true.
Oh, that's really, it's going to be really interesting to taste L'Evangile. So it's a little bit, you tweaked a few things in 2020, you think, like a little bit more precision going on.
I think there was a sense of going inside the plots and dividing it, and I think that is what Juliette and Olivier had learned in China and adapted it to the Pomerol situation.
Wow, that sounds I'm excited to taste the wine. And what happened as far as Sauternes? It was a very tricky year for Sauternes. Like there wasn't much of development, and in the end, if you waited long enough, you may have got some. Did you make something at Riosac?
Yeah, it was very tricky, and we basically, Botrytis took ages to come in, and the issue was that the grapes were already very, very mature. So it really developed very late, and in the end, we're going to do a very baby Riosec. We're going to do 9,000 bottles. So it's very, it's like the essence of what we found, and we really wanted that beautiful confit that the noble rot gives you. And we really did this very, like a baby, very acidic, very balanced Riosec. But it was a challenge, and this year will be a challenge once again because of the frost. So it's hard times for Sauternes, but we're motivated.
So, and how do you think the wines will change with the élevage, with the aging in the barrel? What do you think will happen? I haven't really asked many people that.
Which ones? The ones, the 2020s?
Yeah, 2020. Yeah.
I think it's it will. I know that with L'Evangile, we have a challenge that is, and it's a process that we had started with Eric. It's really thinking about how we oak the wine and not to overdo it. And I think that's really one of the big challenges, to keep freshness and to have balance. For Duart Milon and Lafite and Carruade, I think we're in a more classical, low intervention oak approach.
And it's a very good answer. You probably taste a lot of wine. It's a very and powerful vintage. Then the effect on such vintage, the effect of the aging is always very important, because it transforms and makes them much more drinkable. And I think, for example, that the effect on the 2020 will be more important than it could be on the 19, because the 19 is so soft, so drinkable. So some wines can be very, very rich and tannic, and then the aging will be very, very useful on them. But as Saskia said to you, in terms of new oak, all estates, particularly in L'Evangile, for Merlot, or in hot country, we are reducing more and more the new oak.
Sounds like you're really set up for something special. And just one other question, Saskia. I'm sure you've thought about it a lot. What are your feelings about prices this year? Because a lot of people are asking me, particularly in the trade. So it'd be good to get your thoughts on that.
Prices, you end up really deciding the night before, and it's all a question of a lot of elements. First, the quality of the vintage. And I really believe that I love 2020, to be honest, and I'm not being I don't know how you say it in French. You say Marseillais. You say I'm not exaggerating in saying this. I think it's in all of the estates, it's really revealing the identities. I love the Duart Milon we did. That's way more precise with the new cellar. I love L'Evangile with this new identity. I think Lafite will stand out because of its purity, and it's an absolute Lafite. So I think there's this quality element that we'll take into account. And then of course there's the economic situation of the country, and you've seen that the stock exchange has gone up, and the situation, the economic situation, is getting better, even if the mood is not as good. So we'll take into account these three criteria, and of course we'll stay in something that is not pretentious and long term in the way we decide our price. So I think we'll
that sounds like a rise in price to me, but anyways.
You'll see. I think it will not be anything absolutely over the moon. I think it will be something reasonable, but that takes into account the extraordinary quality of 2020, and we have to take that into account.
I hope it's not too much if you do increase, because I think that Bordeaux created really great goodwill globally, and last year's sale was fantastic. All the energy and everyone was so excited about Bordeaux, and a lot of new consumers bought the wines too. So yeah. I think it's a great moment. You know, this trilogy, it could be a new like benchmark for a new generation, which is interesting.
Just you're like right.
Yeah.
I think that the goodwill that was created after 2019, we can't not acknowledge that, and we have to keep in that trend of converting these new consumers to wine. So of course we don't have to go insane on prices, and it's not at all what we will do. We'll stay really much in the same realm.
Good. And so do you have a favorite of the trilogy yet? I know this is a really mean question, because they're all three, excellent vintages, but is there one in particular you're already favoring?
I personally, and then maybe Eric and Juliette can say, yeah. I personally love the 2020, to be honest. I think that it's my style of wine. It's the style of Lafite. It's the style I learned. It's the wines I learned to love when I was young. because it's the identity of these older Lafittes that are very straight and linear and pure. So I really love the 2020. I have I think 2018 is an interesting vintage, but it's more atypical, you know, and 2019 has its charm, but I'm really in love with the 2020.
How about you, Eric?
I completely share what you think. Now we are testing very often in the same profile with Saskia, but I'm sharing totally what she said. For me, 19 was definitely, I prefer definitively 19 to 18 because of the classicism of 19. And I think that 2020 have all the quality of the 19, and also a form of power, a form of power compared to the so fantastic sweetness of the 90. And then for me, it's more great. That's why I love a lot 2020.
And Juliette, for the newcomer, the
well, I think in comparison, you have a sort of austerity, you know, in the wines, and I love this. Like, kind of, we have to discover maybe in few years or years or 10 years, and that's why we love this kind of wine. You know, you have the kind of classicism, like Eric say, but the 1919 was very like powerful, and he still is. That's the 20, yes, could be like this kind of straight form and tension. That's what we like. Good elegancy, we can say. So we have to manage aging to still keep this kind of horizontal tasting.
Let's taste some wines then. Thanks for your comments. I'm already salivating, ready to try them. So. Which wine do you want to try first then?
We usually begin with Durmillon, Caruana.
Okay.
Lafitte and Autumn.
Let's do that. So it was last year was the first year for the new Shay, right, of Duhar, or is it this year?
This vintage, the 2020.
Oh, okay.
You have to, as soon as you come to Europe or France, you have to come see it.
Mm.
It's very simple in the middle of Pauillac, but it's a cool place.
Absolutely. Do you still use press wine in your wines?
Of course. Okay,
I said, do you use the vin de presse still?
Of course. Yeah, okay, in all wines, we always use a press, a lot of press, particularly in Pauillac. And in the second wine, this year for the Moulin du Har and Caruel, we use 11% press. And for the Durmillon, we use 15%.
Wow.
It's a high level because the press was great. As you know, we don't like to extract too much during the alcoholic fermentation. Then we always have rich press and interesting. And that's why particularly like that this year.
Very subtle wine, subtle with nice complexity and fine tannins, and it's really juicy too, savory, savour.
Yeah, there is an incredible freshness, and it didn't come from the acidity. It came from the aromas. It's an aromatic freshness.
Yummy. Okay, so now we'll try the Carawad then.
Karuad is very, very different from the last one, because you remember the last one we use only 27% of Merlot. It was the lowest proportion of Merlot, historic lowest proportion of Merlot for Karuad. And this year, we come back to more classic proportion of Merlot with 52% of Cabernet Sauvignon, free of Cabernet Franc, and free of Petit Verdot. Then a great, more and less a great classic in the average Carveron.
So tell me again the assemblage.
Excuse me?
What was the assemblage again?
42 Merlot, 52 Cabernet Sauvignon, 3 Cabernet Franc, and 3 Petit Verdot. And the Dur Milan was 72 Cabernet Sauvignon, 28. C'est mon son qui est mauvais ou c'est toujours pareil?
C'est à peu près le même. Mais c'est pas grave.
Oui.
Okay. Let's see. I think that the Carveron really has great classic structure, how it starts off slowly and then really finishes at the end. That, you know, in the old days, Carveron was really more about the attack and then it sort of faded a little. That's a big, you know, that's been the change in the last few years, is, you know, how it just goes on the finish, more like the Grand Vin.
Yeah. Now we are very happy because we have a real density in the Carveron, but a good density. Because to have density is easy. You can just extract. But very often it kills the elegance and the purity. And sometimes it could be like that. Today it's a very rich Carveron, but at the same time very, very precise and very close to Lafite style.
And I totally agree.
And after the
let me take a photo.
After the 19, we have a great, great tension. We are very happy, even with this high proportion of Merlot, to feel such a tension again this year. It's very, very characteristic vintage.
I think what Juliette mentioned, that she liked a certain form of austerity in the 2020, and I think that Carveron has that. It has a quite austere but very long story to tell.
Yeah. Okay, and so now the Grand Vin, the Lafite. It's so long, but it's really interesting because it just has this presence, and it's not the tannins, and it's just keeps, you can tell it's there, but then it's not there. It's so subtle like that. Incredible energy.
You can be sure that in terms of presence, they are the wine.
Yeah.
Very, very rich. And in Lafite, this year, again, we use a lot of press because we use a 15.5% at the end. We even imagine perhaps in the future use a little bit more, but for instance, we didn't decide. Again, when we feel during the vinification that the grape was too rich, we feel that it was necessary to do extraction, and then after that, the effective press was incredible this year again.
A really fascinating wine to taste.
Yeah, it's an incredible. Very often we repeat that with this capacity to join the richness and the purity, and I think this year more than all the other, it's incredible. We use 7% of Merlot. This is an average, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the Merlot was and particularly the new terroir now we can use during two or three last years. We work a lot on the Merlot, but compared to the power and very, very difficult for them. That's why.
And so, so it's 93% Cabernet then?
92, mm-hmm. 7 of Merlot, and 1% of Petit Verdot. Petit Verdot was very, very nice. Of course, it's always our very, very little plots, but very old, because they were planted in 1933. And it was absolutely delicious. Because
it's 12.8 degrees alcohol. Is that just because you picked early, or why did you have such low alcohol?
No, it's because this year we never seen the alcohol increasing like the two previous years. It's due, as I said to you, it's due to the very, very good order of the good period we have. Strong stress in July, good outement, good lignification. Then after that, when the rain arrived again, the vineyard was very, very outé and don't have the capacity to produce sugar and work again. That's why after that, and it's excellent. It's just the perfect order. And that's why the level of alcohol stay very adapted and never go over 13. And a lot of tanks were picked just at 12, like it was in when I begin to work in Lafitte.
Now it's really
crazy. It was crazy because everyone had told us that 2020 was very, very hot, and we were measuring the vats, and they were very, like we used to know them in the 90s and 80s. So it was very surprising. It's that paradox that we were talking about.
And it is. It could be like 82 or what did I have the other day? I had a really wonderful bottle of Lafitte. I guess it was the 82. It was just gorgeous.
Right, and now the 86 is really good if you have a box. Okay. 86 is extraordinary at the moment.
But I agree with you. It reminds me of those. Like, it reminds me of the what Lafitte made its name, you know, name on. And remember the 150th anniversary. We tasted some amazing wines, and they were like 10.8 degrees alcohol. Remember, they had beautiful colors, and it's really special. Maybe that's the new, you know, the new style, the new character of it. It's 3 years in a row we've had this interesting cycle, weather cycle. Three in a row. We'll see what happens this year. But anyways, I love the wine.
You know, what was fun is that in Bordeaux, people said in end of August, of September, wow, the alcohol the sugar is not increasing. They were almost afraid. But no good news.
And it wasn't because there was a blockage, right? It was just stable like that.
Sometimes it was a blockage.
Yeah.
In our situation, it was not a blockage at all because we have a lot of grain. We have 120 millimeters.
Well, that's really exceptional. So let's try the Levangio now.
Okay.
I can see it's not lacking any color. It has all the color it needs. This is very primary. Like the nose is just like crushed grapes.
You know, juiciness, yes.
Yeah, with the pips, with the seeds.
Yeah.
It's interesting why also the other day I did a tasting with your cousins at Mouton, and their wines were also, what I found interesting is they were very primary, like really like just tasting crushed grapes. Yeah. And normally I don't know if it's something from the vintage or what, but normally the wines are much more like polished at an early stage in general. But this year, a lot of the wines have very sort of pure character, just showing the fruit and not really fruity fruit, but just really nicely ripened grapes. You know what I mean? Not ultra, you know, solaire, you know, a sunny character, but this has real purity to it.
Yeah, and I think that was really what we were going for, to really stay away from over-ripening aromas and really stay on fresh aromatic freshness, as we were saying. And that was really the challenge of the team this year.
Yeah, it was a key point. I think it was a good compound for us during the blend. And because we have 88% of Merlot and 12% of Cabernet Franc, but most of coming from the old Cabernet Franc, and it was very interesting. This touch can change the tannin structure and also the tension in the wines. So it was, we spent a lot of hours to test some different blends with this kind of Cabernet Franc. I think it was like 8 hours just for 2 or 3% of the blend. But for us, it was very important to keep it this juiciness and this acidity in the wine. And to keep this freshness too, we have less new oak too. We have 50% of new oak. Usually it was between 70 or 80%. And the aging for us, it's very important. The selection of barrels, the quantity of new barrels, but also the toasting of the barrels. It's a change for us, for L'Evangile, and for the 2020 vintage also.
So did you change the tonnelier then?
No, it's still the cooperage of our cooperage in Pauillac. But maybe we have more.
Okay, you guys, yeah. I guess yeah. Not. But it's true. It has less like coffee character, and I totally agree. It barely has any prise de bois.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
And this year we use for Evangile, like 7% of amphora. To keep this roundness, you know, but not with opulency that we can have sometimes too much. So amphora can be good compounds too for us for the aging.
It's very different than the 2018, which was much more opulent, but I would put it at I would put it at the same level. It's more sophisticated, but anyways, we'll see in the end what it's like in bottle. But I really like I already want to drink it. That's a good sign. I don't think you should bottle these. You should just sell it by the barrel. Everyone can drink right away. It's so good. Yeah. Okay, well, listen, thank you so much for the tasting. The wines were exceptional, and it was a very fascinating conversation about the alcohol, the freshness, and thanks for being so candid too with your personal thoughts right away. Like, okay, I like this. I like that. I like your, James, decisiveness.
James, correct, last point, very interesting for the vintage to say, is that this vintage gives us a stage, because in the context of the global warming, you hear me?
Sorry, there is a bit of a static.
I want to say that in the context of the global warming, it's a great surprise for us after a so hot vintage to see that it's always possible in Bordeaux, in all Bordeaux, such a elegant and fresh vintage.
Yeah, I get it. So you're saying that even though it was a hot and dry year, particularly during the summer, that it's fantastic, and that's what makes Bordeaux so special, that at the same time you can end up with wines that are so fresh.
Yeah, basically in the context of global warming, it's reassuring to us to see that in such a vintage we can produce such wines. It makes us a little bit more confident about the future.
Exactly. And because it happened one time, it can happen again, or we can push that.
Yeah. Well, you guys are some of the masters in viticulture and winemaking, as far as I'm concerned. So you have a long history, but you also adapt to things, and I'm really excited. Global warming is a disaster, and we hope that things can improve if we all work together. But at the same time, Bordeaux's adapt very well to it, making very exciting wines. But we don't want temperatures to get any higher. So, okay, well, thanks again, and congratulations on the wine. And I feel great. The wines were just so delicious to taste and well structured, and just in. It's funny. They are sort of old school in some way, like wines I learned in the 80s tasting with your father Saskia and Boissonneau and Emile Peynot, where they were just telling me, no, Monsieur. The wines, when they're great from the barrel, and that's really these wines.